Hi everyone, Anna here. I am coming to you at 7.5 weeks postpartum. I had to actually go and look at the calendar to find out where we were up to because it's just that period around Christmas and New Year where I've totally lost track of what the days are, and that's kind of how it is on baby time anyway. And I'm sitting here reclined on my bed and baby is sleeping on my chest and it is a million degrees, but she's smiling very sweetly and it's lovely. Before we start, I want to acknowledge that I'm here on Awabakal country, pay my respects to elders past and present and those who will become the elders of that community as well. So I've made some notes so I don't get too lost, but I wanted to actually give you some info about some things that are happening before we start rather than at the end of the podcast like I usually do. So there's three things I want to tell you about. One of them is that if you are listening to this and it's before midnight Sydney time on the 9th of January, I'm running a book giveaway competition in collaboration with the authors of 6 other Australian birth, pregnancy, motherhood related books. And it's on Instagram. So if you're on Instagram, go across to Anna Cusack Postpartum and enter the comp. It's pretty easy. You just follow along the accounts and you tag a friend. And that's one entry. You can tag as many friends as you like. Just put them in separate comments to maximize your chances of winning. So the books, I'm doing this off the top of my head, so I hope I remember them all. The books are You Already Knew by Zoe Hark, Soul Modes by Carly Marie, Life After Birth by Vaughn Geary and Jess Prescott from Mama Goodness. And that one is actually, you'll go onto the pre-order list for that one. It's released very soon in 2023. Raising Resilient and Compassionate Kids by Lael Stone and Marion Rose, the hosts of the Aware Parenting podcast. My book, The Birth Map by Catherine Bell. And also The Mum Who Found Her Sparkle, which is a picture book that my beautiful friends Jesse Elliott and Mary Sotropoulos are releasing about mid-year. So they're the 7 books. Jump across and do that. Open to anybody who's in Australia. I do have to say it's Australian residents only, sorry. The next 2 things, though, are open to people anywhere around the world. So a lot of people who are listening along to my content have a fairly strong interest in birth and postpartum and supporting mothers and families through all of those, particularly the opening, the early stages of parenting. So if that's you, there are 2 courses that I'm an affiliate for that are opening up a new intake. So one of those is birth cartography training, which is birth mapping. So rather than helping people to make a birth plan that's a set of preferences or wishes, it's imagining the trajectory of labor and birth, or even skipping labor if you're going a cesarean pathway, as a pick a path adventure. So right from early on in pregnancy, where you really have to know, if I accept this test that's part of standard care, which options will then be presented to me or taken off the table, and which way do I want to pick my path through pregnancy to and labor to have the greatest likelihood of getting the birth that I want, and how to advocate for yourself, how to include your partner or support people in that process, etc. So that's making a birth map. That's something that I'll be helping people with when I come back from maternity leave in a more formal sense. I've been doing it in an informal sense for a long time, but it's a service that I'm going to start offering people properly. If you'd like to do the birth mapping or birth cartographer training, Catherine Bell runs an online full day training in it every, I think it's the 10th of every month for this calendar year, 2023. And there's also an online course version, and she occasionally runs face-to-face trainings as well. So I'm going to put my affiliate link for that in. An affiliate just means that the price to you if you sign up is the same. It just means that I would get a small slice, 5 or 10% of your enrollment fee. And that is a great way to do things, I think. If I have a certifiable course, I'll be doing that kind of pathway rather than pumping all my money into social media advertising, because I think they make enough money. Yes, baby. you think so too. The other one is there is a new course. The postpartum doula course that I did was through Newborn Mothers Postpartum Doula Training kind of academy. And I also did a breastfeeding support course through them. Now they've combined those courses, expanded it, added in modules about what is normal infant sleep and how to help parents set up realistic expectations. Also around advocacy, human rights, and a big focus on mental health as well. So if you want to do the practical side of postpartum doula support work in home particularly, or just have a better understanding so that you can support of the postpartum period, so that you can support your friends, your clients in other areas through that transition to motherhood in a more holistic kind of way, they are having their new intake of this expanded course in February. So I'm also an affiliate for that training. I have worked quite closely with Julia, who is the head honcho of Newborn Mothers Training, and some of the other educators in that course. And I really believe that that program is the way to go if you are interested in becoming a postpartum professional. Okay, that was very long. Now I'm going to get into my own postpartum update. Thank you for sticking around. Let's get started. Again, I had to go back and look at the calendar to see what's actually happened since we last checked in. So the day or two after I recorded the last episode for you, I did an interview with Positive Birth Australia, which is a great podcast to listen to if you're looking for the reflections and learnings and getting into the vibe of just like good births. No birth horror stories to be found there. So I described both my births and how that all played out on that podcast, and the episode will be released, I think, probably in the next 6 weeks, but I'll let you know when that comes out. And then it kind of got into the groove of gearing up for Christmas. So we had quite a quiet Christmas here. I have a little family and we were with my family, who are the more local ones this year. So that was pretty cruisy. I could just sub in and out with baby as I needed to. My big girl did lots of swimming. It was great. She loves Christmas lights. So we had a couple of nights driving around. Mostly that was good. There was one night that it was a bit of a disaster with the baby as well, and I spent a fair bit of time legging it back to the car and feeding in the car and changing her on a car seat, and it just it was a bit of a schmozzle. So that wasn't great, but there was a really heart bursting kind of time in that night as well, where I was just cuddling the baby, and my older one was playing in, it's like a foam machine set up to be like snow. And so she was playing in all this foam, and we'd done the same thing last year and she'd loved it. And at that point, little one wasn't even conceived yet. She wasn't even a little whole seed at that point. And I just thought how ridiculous it was that this year was just the year of her, of growing her, of connecting with her, of welcoming her, birthing her, carrying her, feeding her, growing her from the outside as well. And it just was incredible to think that, yeah, she was hoped for, but she wasn't even on the proper radar at that point. And to have it all in the one calendar year, I think really drives home just how miraculous that is. It was wild. We also we live close to the Hunter Valley. So we went to the Hunter Valley Gardens, big Christmas light spectacular thing. And that went surprisingly well as well, to be able to drive up there, which is almost an hour from our place, and have both children be able to handle that was, I really can't fathom it the amount that I was restricted or self-restricted with my first baby, hating the car so much that it wouldn't matter if we were going to sleep, going to drive somewhere right on bedtime, she would stay awake and scream for no matter how far we had to drive. So we just didn't go very far. Like when I was by myself, I went 12 minutes. That was the maximum that I left my house for about 6 months. I've talked about this before. I don't need to talk about this again. The lights were really good. I have been managing feeding in public places, leaning back a bit. It's still not our best position, but the baby doesn't starve, so that's a winner. The day after that, though, I had all these things that looked like bites on my back, and I was like, I must have had my back exposed when I had the baby in a baby carrier for a while. I've got all these mozzie bites on me. And then the next day, those bites were gone, but there was all these marks on other parts of my body. Anyway, turns out I had postpartum hives. Never heard of it before, but it's a thing. So when you are pregnant, your body is partly immunosuppressed so that you don't reject the baby and the placenta because they're essentially a foreign organism growing inside you. So therefore, I got sick all the time through winter. But also, when you have given birth, your immune system has to come back online a bit. And during that period, it can overshoot the mark. And so this can show up in things like dietary intolerances or skin, like overly histamine kind of responses, like hives. So first time around, I got the dietary things, and I will probably talk about that a little bit in a minute. Yeah, really problematic gut things after first baby. This time around, I scored the skin ones instead, probably because the gut one is under control. So the risk factors are being in the early postpartum period, a few specific sicknesses, one of them being strep throat, which I'd had the week before we went to the gardens, using painkillers like ibuprofen, which I had been taking for the strep throat, pollen exposure, just been to the gardens, which is, you know, the most flowery, polleny place that you can be at, and being low on sleep and being stressed. And both of those things are not super relevant, but obviously my system is a bit more under pressure than it usually would be if I didn't have a baby. I think there's another one, but I can't remember what the other risk factor was. But I pretty much ticked every box and was like, oh, well, this sucks. Particularly when I was reading that they can last for 6 weeks or even become chronic. And I just thought, oh, I can't deal with that for that long. One of the treatments for it, though, is probiotics. And I'd continued to take probiotics, as I'd explained in the last episode, to prevent mastitis and to help with my gut. And I think because of that, the hives didn't really take root. Like they were only itchy if I scratched them first, kind of like if you leave a mozzie bite be, instead of starting it, then it doesn't get too itchy. And I could take some antihistamines for it, which you can't really do when you're pregnant, but I could do now. So I took the antihistamines as well. And yeah, they cleared up within, probably took a week. So every day I would wake up with welts on a different part of my body. The old ones would go down and new ones would come up. And so they just moved around for a week. It looked pretty bad. I went and got a haircut and they were all in the bottom of my hairline, and the hairdresser was like, oh, what's going on here? Is this something contagious? But no, it was hives. So no one was going to catch that. So I'd never heard of it before, but now I have. And I put a survey on my Instagram stories and about 100 people responded, and 20% of them said that they'd had it before. There was also a lot of people who clicked past it without answering. So I think it would probably be a lower percentage than that, but it's very possible that it's quite common. So I think that's the main thing that's happened with my health. I did have my pelvic floor physio appointment as well, which I'd booked during my pregnancy because I left it way too late with the first baby. So I thought, no, I'll do this when I've definitely got my partner around. And yeah, so it ended up that he kept the big kid and I took the baby with me. Again, would have been unthinkable with the first baby's temperament, but I managed it this time fine. I even did some errands on the way home, which again, blows my mind that I can do that kind of stuff. So pelvic floor physio assessment involves a very thorough questionnaire. The most thorough kind of health screening that you're going to have. Then they ask for you to perform a couple of like pelvic floor squeezes or exercises. And if you consent to it, they check both your abdominal separation, because those kind of the rectus abdominis, which is like the six pack muscles, the line down the middle of them gets sort of broken open, has to expand to make room for the growing baby. And that's can be an important thing to see how those muscles are knitting back towards each other or staying separate. And also, if you consent, they'll do an internal examination, which is where they wear a glove, put their fingers, looped fingers, just inside the vagina and get you to squeeze and hold or do some different maneuvers to check which muscles in your pelvic floor are and are not working properly. So mine seem to be doing all right at the moment. They also check for prolapse, which is important because prolapse of the uterus into the vaginal cavity can be silent, which means that you don't know about it, you don't feel it, particularly in the early part postpartum where you're not really doing anything to stress your body as you might do later when you want to run after children or jump on a trampoline with them or something like that. If you don't strain your system, you might not know that you have one, which can then be managed at an earlier grade rather than like worsening it and then having more problems with it. So at this stage, they're not sensing any prolapse there. My pelvic floor muscles have okay strength, but they just don't have any endurance. So I should be able to keep a really strong contraction of the proper muscles for at least 10 seconds and mine give up after 4 seconds. So they've just given me some activities to do to build that strength up, and I'm finding that I'm much more motivated to do the exercises this time around because I have an older kid to chase after that I want to be able to chase after safely. And not even chase after in the sense of like wrangle and danger and whatever, because I would do those things regardless of how my pelvic floor was, but I just want to be able to play. I feel really motivated to, I want to ride bikes. I want to be able to like take her on the high ropes course. I want to be able to take her rock climbing because I think she's getting almost old enough to do some of these things. I want to be able to catch her when she jumps off stuff and not feel like I'm really having to concentrate on what my abdominal pressure is doing so as to not leak anywhere. So yeah, the motivation is there, and I have a follow-up appointment with the physio in February. Then, yeah, Christmas parties. We didn't really go many places other than doing Christmas light looking. There was one party at a friend's house, and I just took up residence on the recliner chair for a good bit of it, and people could come and go as they wanted to, and that was nice to kind of socialize without pressure. We have seen my partner's family a fair bit. We saw members of his family six or seven days in a row, but they all live multiple hours away. So our rule at the moment is that people staying at our house can't stay more than a maximum of one night, and they were all staying for longer than that. So they stayed other places and we just saw them in the day, and that worked perfectly. They all got sleep, we all got sleep, and then we got to enjoy each other. One of those things was we took big girl 10-pin bowling. Now, I am old. I obviously have not gone 10-pin bowling for a long time because I was blown away by like how loud it was there. Like, it sounds ridiculous because I know they always used to play music and film clips and stuff at bowling when I was a kid, but this was like a nightclub in a bowling alley, and they also had Dodgem cars and a bar and a full games arcade in the same thing, and it was so noisy. I think I almost had a panic attack, if I'm honest. I was carrying the baby because she wouldn't go back in her pram. I had the big girl just running from thing to thing, wanting everything. I didn't have money with me. Like, her grandmother was there as well, who needs some assistance with mobility, and her dad and uncle were doing bowling and not really child caring, and I couldn't handle it, and I had to go up to my partner and say, I need to leave with the baby. I can't do this. And so they stopped their game after 7 turns instead of the full 10, because I had to leave, or I would have had some kind of meltdown or breakdown in the place. That's not an accurate word. I could feel like panic rising and hyperventilating and starting to feel like my vision and capacity was starting to shut down. I just had to leave. So I did, and that was much better. But yeah, I remember getting overstimulated very quickly in my first postpartum, but I didn't think that a setting like that would set me off as much as it did this time. So yeah, good to be able to recognize that and get out. I also had my 6-week appointment with the midwife. She checked the baby, checked me. Everything is going as it should. Baby's tracking along her, centile line for her weight, which is cool. I had no doubts about that. She asked me questions like, how often is she feeding? How many times a day is she having wet or dirty nappies? How much is she sleeping in a 24-hour period? I think we spoke about that. She didn't ask me directly for her records, but I think we spoke about it. And every question I was like, I don't know. And I kind of could sit there and figure it out and make an educated guess, but I'm not tracking anything, and that feels great to me. Like, I think, for some people, it may help them. For me, it would make me feel more worried and more anxious. I feel like I can tell by how frequently it feels like I'm changing her that she has a good nappy output, and I can see she's getting bigger in her clothes and she's reasonably content between feeds. So that means she's doing fine. I don't need to check those things. I don't need to take her to a maternal child health nurse every week or second week to get weighed. They're all optional things. You don't have to do them. You don't have to use any tracking apps. You don't have to go to anyone else that, just wants to keep an eye on them. Unless, if she was like dropping centile lines on that chart at this appointment, then I might have looked at something. But also I might have gone, I'd like to leave it a few more weeks because I feel like everything's tracking along fine. And yeah, not everybody just follows a curve. There are little growth spurts and all sorts of factors play into things. So yeah, I don't have any apps. I was wondering I might get the Wonder Weeks app. That was helpful first time around, but even then I feel like maybe I just don't want to know. Maybe she'll just be fussier and then calmer at different points, and second time around I just know that everything passes, so I'll just wait it out a lot of the time and not worry myself ahead of time by going, oh, next week's going to be rubbish because there's a stormy patch. Just let it roll. So I don't know what else you'd really like to know. Feeding's going well. She's like, again, I don't know exactly, but she's probably feeding every 2 to 3 hours at night. Same in the day. I'd say two hourly, probably around the clock. Sometimes it's a little bit shorter, sometimes a little bit more. I still have a lot of milk that I kind of have to manage for my mastitis risk and for her gut health and gassiness. So she suckles, brings on a letdown. I take her off. I run all that letdown milk into a towel because it's literally like a jet fountain at her, the poor thing. She can't keep up with it. And then when that's finished, I put her back on. And whenever she – and then she stops feeding eventually and she has a break. She probably waits about maybe like 10 minutes. And then she wants to feed again and I feed her on the same side because that way she's getting a bit more – just the milk that comes later has a higher fat content, which can slow down the digestion a bit. Because if then I was just giving her that fast milk on the other side, she ends up getting quite unsettled in the tummy. And I can see – we're going to talk about baby poo, so, you know, tune out if that's an issue for you. She ends up getting globs or really stringy bits of mucus in her nappy. And that was what was an indicator for oversupply first time around. It's not nearly to the stage that it was first time because I was kind of switch feeding, which is where you give like the left breast for a certain amount of time and the right breast for a certain amount of time. With my first daughter, by 12 weeks, her poos were fluoro green and only stringy mucus. And this time around, the poos are still the right colour. There are globs of mucus in them. So I can see that it's kind of like still a risk, but it's not progressing to that point. And so the first time around, you know, I'm going, oh, she must be allergic to something that I'm eating. So I'm cutting out all this stuff that they say is potentially upsetting for babies, blah, 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 blah. I was also dealing with my own food intolerances. So these things were getting really, like my diet was getting more and more restricted. I was getting more tired. She was getting more windy, blah, blah, blah. No, I just had to see a proper lactation consultant who could help me deal with the oversupply that I didn't know was the problem. So yeah, that feeding her properly, not using a haka this time because even that little bit of pulling pressure was building up the supply last time. The body gets tricked and thinks that you're feeding two babies instead of one. So the feeding is much better. And I think because of that and because of a different temperament baby and all of these sorts of things, sleep is better too. So as I said before, she's having a sleep on me at the moment. She's now having at least two really long awake patches in the day. She's probably staying awake for 3 hours at a time on two different occasions. And then she'll have another 2 hour block awake in the day. And then she always has a 1 to 2 hour patch awake at 4 a.m. as well. So there is a bit of a pattern starting and... But I kind of don't notice it until someone asks me or until I think, oh, when would be a good time to do this? And then I'll kind of go, oh, well, she might sleep about this time. So, we can do it before or after or whatever. And when I said before she's reasonably content between feeds, I have to say reasonably content when someone's carrying her the way that she likes to be carried. Like she can be put down for a couple of minutes while I quickly prepare lunch or use the toilet or something like that, have a really quick shower. Again, I couldn't do any of those things with my first baby, so this feels like heaven. And then she'll cry and want to get picked up. But generally she wants to be carried all the time. And the sleep is working because every sleep is in contact with somebody. And if I put her down, then she'll wake up again. Like these are all normal baby behaviors. She's not some unicorn, like put her in a cot and she'll sleep for 12 hours straight sort of baby, which some babies are. And if that's your baby, enjoy that. Other babies you may or may not have could be different. I think that's most of what I was going to say. I am actually getting really excited about what things I'll be able to offer people when I come back to work from mat leave. So I think that'll be sort of late March, early April. I'm just going to open up a couple of time slots a week to do the birth mapping that I was describing earlier and also postpartum planning sessions, and then sort of transition to motherhood and motherhood support sessions too. I already offer birth debriefing, but I'm doing some additional training to be better at that, or to feel, I don't know, to feel more qualified in it, I suppose. Learn some new techniques as well to help people process all that stuff. And then, you know, I can also offer some support around making complaints if that's something that needs to be done in relation to a maternity service. So I think the way that I'm going to do it is offer 2 prenatal and 2 postnatal support sessions as a package. So that would be birth mapping, postpartum planning, and then 2 sessions after a birth debrief and another motherhood support session. And I think that's sort of going to be my primary thing that I'm going to offer, because I won't be putting this one in any kind of formal care in the foreseeable future, which means I won't be doing in-home support for other people in the foreseeable future either. And I feel like, yeah, supporting other people with their babies while I still have a baby under 12 months old maybe isn't something that I necessarily want to do. So that is the way I'm heading with that. I just have my journal next to me, and I'm going to finish by reading out some random reflections and lessons that I have that I've jotted down in the last little while. And hopefully there'll be something in there that could be helpful or interesting for you. Okay, so I asked myself, what lessons have come to me during this postpartum so far? What has changed in my world in me? And the first thing that came up was everything and nothing. Point 1, matrescence round 2 is an evolution, not a complete rebirth. So I was, you know, pretty cracked open by the process of becoming a mother, which is what matrescence is by definition. And I was wondering to what degree that would happen again. And I spoke about this in my interview on the Happy Mama Movement podcast with Amy Taylor Cabaz. We called that episode the second inner split. And I was wondering just how much I would be split open again. And I think this time, someone asked me if it was a whole new ball game having 2. And I feel like with the first baby, going from not parents to parents, it was a whole new ball game. But this feels like an extension of the old ball game, if that makes sense. And the matrescence at this point feels similar. It just is an expansion rather than a whole world turned upside down thing. But then I wonder, is this because this baby is easier than the first baby? Would I have had just as much things being turned on my head if I'd had the trickier baby second? So I don't know, but I know the answer. I know one big thing is that the planning works. Postpartum planning really works. I'm reaping the rewards of it this time around, and I really, really encourage you to do it. So yes, not very practical advice. You can't exactly call this in to have the hard baby first, but every time she does something that seems like, you know, within a more normal or average kind of range, I'm like, oh, this is some kind of surreal dream. This is lovely. And I know that that children can, I'm sure she'll just be more difficult at a different stage. Everybody takes their turn, right? But yeah, also we feel more competent in a whole lot of things, including listening to her feelings instead of even the baby's feelings, instead of just trying to fix and shush absolutely everything all the time. So yeah, I'm sure many factors. All right, that was point 2. Point 3, you will be pulled both ways at once. Voicing what's happening helps. So even just saying, to your partner or to your older child if they're of an age to understand. I'm finding it hard to help both of you get what you need from me right now. And then you can start to find a solution instead of just getting to that point of complete overwhelm, which can happen literally in a 10-second period. I had one where my partner just went to have a shower the other day. He was gone out of the room for 20 minutes and the baby had had a blowout of the nappy. She'd needed to feed. Something else happened with my older child. I think she'd busted herself and needed like to be cleaned up from blood or something. There was something on the stove that started boiling over. Like it just went from 0 to 100 in a very short space of time. And my nervous system was frazzled. So yeah. Voice what's happened before it gets to a critical point. Use all of the help and use all of the leave. Any person who can help you, particularly in those key points, which for me is like early mornings from kind of 6 till 7:30 and kind of witching hour just before dinner time, so 4:30 to 5:30. That's the time that we're using screen time for our older child. But in the morning, like if my partner was getting up and going to work, I wouldn't be able to have a lie-in because I'd be having to parent the older one. And baby always has this awake patch between like 4 and 5:30 in the morning. So I am accumulating sort of 1 to 2 hours of extra sleep every day, which across a week is a whole night's worth of sleep by him not being at work at this point. So if he was at work, I could have somebody come and help me in the day and try and sleep during one of the baby's naps on while she's on me, whatever. But we need to have the support to be able just to get enough sleep. You can't heal and you can't function properly without sleep. Start preparing from the second that you know you want another child. So for me, this included finding a childcare center or a preschool and going on a wait list and then really helping her through a long transition. She was not happy leaving me. She's been a COVID kid that was with me all the time. That has been an essential part of my preparation from the very start for this postpartum. That preschool is part of our support network. And that leads into the next point. Early childhood educators can be your village saints. Next point, all parents need to know about safe co-sleeping. You will need it when they're sick. Even if we had not planned to co-sleep, we needed to for 3 weeks. Weeks 3 to 6 or 3, 4 and 5 of her life. She was sick. She needed to be held upright all the time. And that wasn't a worry for me because I knew how to set up our bed and co-sleep safely. If I'd been holding her on a recliner to sleep every night to be upright because she couldn't breathe through her nose, we could have ended up in some really risky situations. So even if you're not a good candidate for co-sleeping, you need to know how to optimize your sleep surface and how to do it as safely as possible. Early intervention with anything makes a huge difference. So as I said before, I didn't get a lactation consultant and had this oversupply problem with my first baby. We didn't see the lactation consultant until 14 weeks. This time I had the lactation consultant come on day 3. Huge difference. Excuse me. Continuity of care is essential. Having my midwife to call on until 6 weeks, being a private midwife, was amazing. If you don't have somebody like that, try and get a doula or somebody who can provide that continuity of care to you. You don't have to explain the situation every single time. We're up to point number 10. Postpartum can be enjoyable. Number 11, your older kids will surprise you. So I think the biggest surprise for me is that she was sleeping in my bed at least half the night, at least half the week, until the night that I was in labor. And since then, she just flicked a switch and has been fine to sleep with her dad in a different room every single night. Hasn't come into me once. There was another time where we were driving and baby was just, she was just hungry and she was losing it crying. And I'm sitting in the front going, oh, I'm sorry. I'm sorry, baby will be there soon and you can have your milk soon. But inside I was like very, I don't know, falling apart or heightened. You've heard me talk about my car trauma before, car crying trauma. And yeah, big girl's just sitting in her seat in the back going, "It's okay, baby. You can have your milk when you get there. I know what'll help. I'll read you a book." And she opens up this picture book that she's memorized and just starts calmly reading it. And meanwhile, baby's still just going, "Ah," as loud as can be. And she just kept talking in this calm voice. And I was like, wow, this is just, it's just modeling things back to me that are not always pretty. But this one, I was really impressed. Even this morning, she said, we have two bathrooms in our house, and we were in the ensuite bathroom, and she's going, "Mom, I need to do a wee." And I was like, "I can't help you up onto this toilet. Sorry. I can't help you up. I only have one hand," because I was carrying the baby with the other hand. "We'll have to run to the other toilet where you've got your step." And she was like, "Just put the baby in the rocker." And there's a little rocker seat like just outside the toilet and shower. And I was like, "Oh yeah, sorry, I didn't even think of that." How can she problem solve these things when she cannot find the cup of water that is next to her hand and she's crying out to me for water, or has a full meltdown when a small drop of that water touches her shirt because now her clothes are wet, but she can manage all these new things. Being three must be a roller coaster of a time. But yeah, your older kids will surprise you. 12. The people who will help you or bring you food will surprise you too. If I had been only relying on my inner circle, we would not have had hardly anything come on our meal train and stuff, we wouldn't have had meals brought to us nearly as often because they've all had their own stuff going on. But I opened it up, I put it up there on my social media, invited people in to help me only if they wanted to, no obligation. I had a week's worth of food brought to me by somebody that I haven't seen for 20 years. Like, I literally haven't seen her since I was 12 years old. And other people who have not been able to, who cooking's not their thing, but have dropped over an activity from my kid. Or someone actually had bought a steam box. If you haven't heard of vaginal steaming before, you can go and look that up. But they brought a steam box that they'd handmade for me to use on loan and then take back to them. People want to help you. And like I'm saying those things, like the people that brought the activity packs, online friends, never met them in person once. The steam box comes from somebody who I've met, hung out with probably three times. So the people who you would feel most weird about asking for help, maybe the people who are actually able to help you. So just open it up wider than you think. Book appointments ahead of time. Number 14, you don't have to be with your baby all the time to enjoy them. Enjoy how you feel, how it feels to be supported and in love as well. I really didn't want to hand my baby off first time around, which probably was part of her as well. She didn't really want to be with other people who weren't me most of the time. But I'm really enjoying seeing other people hold this baby and knowing that she's being loved by other people in our family who are visiting us. They can hold her and I can give some love to my older kid, or just go, like there have been times where I've just like gone and hidden in my bedroom and read for a while or had a longer shower because I can. And I'm enjoying that this time around. 15, there's more motivation to recover properly second time around. 16, just because I've breastfed before doesn't mean it's automatically easy. There are still things that are hard about it. And I think mentally it's hard being a life support machine. Although now I've got a couple of bottles worth of breast milk expressed in our freezer. I don't feel that pressure quite so much. Lochia or postpartum bleeding is more annoying in summer. Yes, we've talked about that many times, although I have been able to swim now, which has been fantastic. I'm loving it. 18. Parenting the second is kind of like riding a bike. First time you have to learn to ride the bike and the terrain is unfamiliar. This time it's the same bike in new territory. Or you could do that the other way around. This time it's a different bike, but it's the same kind of territory. Nah, I think it's better the first time around. Same bike in new territory. Which is what I described before about the, it's not a whole new ball game. It's just a bit of a variation on it. 19, thank your partner for everything. We just thank each other for like the most mundane small things. Yeah, it could be thank you for bringing the washing off the line. It could be, I don't know, thank you for doing the dishwasher so I didn't have to do it. I don't know. It could be anything. Tasks big or small. Thanks for putting some music on this morning. I wouldn't have thought of it and it put me in a really good mood. And we're doing this all the time and just is building this like feeling of gratefulness in our family. And I can see that my older girl is doing it too. And yeah, it makes me feel nice that we're, that's such a crap word. Makes me feel nice. It feels nice that we're all finding ways to appreciate each other and try to laugh as well. Just nonsense play with the kid, stupid references to movies or old in-jokes or whatever that, you know, sometimes it would be easier or lazier just to stay quiet, but try and find some humor. 21, ebooks are better than scrolling in the night. So I have the free Kindle app and I also have three different library apps, so between those things usually I can find the book that I want to read without actually paying for it, which is great. So your local library and your state library, you can join both of those for free, and then they have free apps that you can read ebooks on for free. 22, if you don't want to, you don't have to track anything. Also said that before. 23, maternal child health nurse visits or appointments are optional. Yes, they are, as discussed previously. I don't go to any. I am going to, when baby gets her 6 to 8 week shots, they all weigh and measure her and sort of, there's a little spot on her skin that I want them to check. But yeah, I don't take my children to the doctor unless it's for that kind of scheduled appointment or if they're sick. I'm not going to have anybody else grill me about my choices when there's nothing wrong. 24, record things like their face when they sleep. Oh my God, why are they so beautiful when they sleep? She's sleeping here on me and she's doing all the little like the eye rolls and smiles in her sleep and all that kind of thing. She's just started not quite giggling, but like you can tell when she's doing a really genuine big happy smile as well. Number 25, if you get a pack of milestone cards to take pictures with, throw away the card about them sleeping through the night. It's just not relevant and it could only depress you about how many years it takes until they can have that one. And also in the research, sleeping, if you look at sleep research, sleeping through the night means with a 5-hour block of sleep. So when people claim that they get babies to sleep through the night by blah, 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 blah age, they only have to get them to sleep for 5 hours at a time. So it's a load of rot. That's the list that I've made so far. And I think this one's waking up. So I'm going to leave that with you. I have no idea how long it'll be until I do my next update. But yeah, enter the competition, check out those trainings. The links are in the show notes. And yeah, I'll let you know when I'm opening up my booking calendar, that kind of thing. But really, just have a lovely January. I hope you get a chance to go slow and dig your teeth into whatever it is that you really love doing for you. I'll talk with you soon.